Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you today, Dr. Paul?
Good, and we have to try to suppress a war coming up. It might be in D.C. today.
Yeah.
The troops are there. They're prepared. There's threat of attack on Washington, D.C. But you know what? We had one on January 6th, and turns out it wasn't quite like they advertised it. You know, there were all these people coming in that believed in the Second Amendment, and they were going to carry their guns in. And now there's an investigation going on, and they're starting to find out the propagandists were off base. But this one, they are being prepared, and they're not going to be criticized for not getting the troops in on time. They're still trying to sort out the truth about where the troops were on January 6th. But I suspect there was some shenanigans going on there. But right now, they kept the troops there.
Yeah.
And they have a fence around there, barbed wire fence, razor wire wiring on top. And they're all set. And then they got Anonymous. Anonymous, they're important people. Wonder who this guy Anonymous is. Because he has a lot of power. All he has to do is call him up and say, you know, I think they're going to attack today. And lo and behold, the government believed it. Maybe somebody in the government made a phone call,
yeah.
You know, and that would be part of the reason. But anyway, they are prepared, and it's in the news, and it's probably ongoing right now. They're going to have, the government is going to have total victory. There will be no shooting, and they will brag about how they were able to do that before it was, you know, the opposition party that caused all the trouble. But now we're in charge, and we were prepared, and there's no crisis. Let's hope it goes as easy as that, because there's always a danger of it breaking out. But the interesting thing about it, though, is Congress has been canceled. The House has been canceled. But my understanding is they didn't cancel the Senate.
No, they didn't.
So the threat has to be not quite as bad as they say. But, Daniel, I want to tell you a little story, which I've told you before, because I find it fascinating, because it had to do with the military draft. And I was looking through history when we were fighting that issue of registration back in the 70s. And that has to do with Patrick Henry, Daniel Webster, who a short time after the British burned down Washington, D.C., including the Capitol,
wow.
He was on the House floor giving this fantastic speech. It's a historic speech on why you don't have a draft. And I thought, boy, if he's not calling for the draft, I mean, it was ever one time, but maybe people who were thinking this was very necessary, maybe they volunteered or whatnot, but he spoke out against that. Now I look at this, it seems almost like some of those people there, not just the men, but maybe some women too, are intimidated.
Yeah.
They are frightened. They're terrified. And there's a political thing going on. And how are we going to spin this? And what should we do? But I don't think that their approach will be quite as bold. It seems to me like they're just terrified, a little bit of freedom. But the same people who are terrified and preparing for this are the same people who are terrified of lightening up a little bit on lockdown.
Yeah.
They think, boy, we can't give these people any liberty. You can't tell what will happen in a country that doesn't have us taking care of them. So that's what's happening up there today. And let's hope my cynicism and my prediction that there's not going to be a major revolt and this will be over, but it'll be a lot of spinning. It's already been spinning a lot.
Yeah, this has a real familiar feel to it, Dr. Paul. I couldn't help thinking that when I was reading. And let's put up the first picture just to illustrate. This is from the BBC, but this is like you'll see everywhere else. U.S. Capitol Police warn of possible militia plot to breach Congress. It's supposed to be today, March 4th. And here, let's look at the scenario. The ramping up security around the Capitol. They canceled the House session. Solemn FBI and Homeland Security Department warnings about, quote, increased chatter among extremists. That's how CNN put it. So chatter, there's more chatter among the extremists. It really sounds like the plot that we had for so many years during the endless war on terror. Remember that? We have heard chatter of terrorists. There's a threat, you know, we had a lot of evacuations of the Capitol. And a lot of that, I think, was theater more than anything else. But that's what we're facing today. But it's not bin Laden. It's not al-Qaeda that's doing it. Now it's domestic terrorists, domestic militias who are the real threat. And here's actually testimony. Can we do the next clip really quick, please? This is acting U.S. Capitol Police Chief. And I apologize for the pronunciation. The name's not easy. Yogananda Pittman, her name is. She testified at the end of last month before Congress. And here's what she says. She just happened to jump into the job because they fired the actual Capitol Hill Police Chief after what happened on the 6th. She said, quote, "We know that members of the militia groups that were present on January 6th have stated their desires, that they want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as they can with a direct nexus to the State of the Union," is what she testified. She didn't provide any evidence, but this is the most outlandish thing to throw out there. Of course, it feeds the narrative that you have to be afraid because the boogeyman is out and is going to blow you up.
What she's saying is be afraid.
Be afraid. Be afraid.
Be afraid to justify what they're doing and all their propaganda. I find it tragic, and unfortunately when they shifted this whole thing, it was as bad as it was that the terrorists were the target, the endless, never-ending target that were the terrorists and jihad around the world. And that's been going on, and like you point out, now they're domestic terrorism. We got to be concerned about the enemy within. We frequently talk about the enemy within, but we're not quite thinking about what they're thinking about. They want to create an enemy that a few people are going to cause this revolution. All of a sudden, there's going to be all this violence. They won't let up until something bad happens. But they are. Bound and determined to scare the people have to support it, and I'm sure a lot of people are saying, boy, I'm glad they're paying attention. We don't want the same thing to happen as before, but in a second we're going to be talking about what didn't happen on the 6th.
Yeah. Well, the essence of propaganda is perception manipulation. You know, this is what the name of the game is, and you have to manipulate and convince people that they didn't see what they thought they saw, and that's why you saw the words armed insurrection coming out of the mouths of people like Nancy Pelosi on the headlines of all the mainstream media. The January 6th melee at the Capitol wasn't just a group of rioting kooks who broke in, but it was an armed insurrection organized by Trump, inspired by his speech to keep Trump as president. And that kept going and going. And if you question it, as Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin did, They accuse him of siding with the rioters. But the fact is, Dr. Paul, and I'm leading up to this, this is testimony recently in Congress, in the Senate. Let's put up the next clip, if we can. FBI counterterrorism official, no firearms recovered during January 6th Capitol breach. They didn't discover any guns. They didn't confiscate any guns. Nobody was charged with gun crimes, and no guns were shot except the Capitol Hill officer who shot that Air Force veteran, unarmed Air Force veteran in the building.
You know, they may have this information because, to me, it would be very important, especially with their charges being made. But I wonder how many pictures and how much proof do they have of individuals who were there cheering the president on at the speech were actually in there doing some damage to the property.
Yeah, real damage, yeah.
Don't you think if they had found 1, 2, 5, 10, 20 of them, couldn't they have rounded them up and say, here they are, here we show you, here they are in the speech. And you know they took pictures of every single thing in the world. And yet they, you know, don't seem to have that information. So then they wonder why people get cynical and are reluctant to believe everything the government says, whether it has to do with foreign enemies, domestic enemies, or the people who are in charge of coronavirus lockdowns. You know, it seems like there's a lot of room there for a lot of mischief. And I think it's great that the FBI actually did this and had an investigation, which, you know, if Ed had found one person, I think you'd have heard about it, you know, with this.
Yeah.
But they don't have that evidence. But I think that they're not going to be any, well, hopefully there's not going to be any arrests or anything today and making these same charges. The fact that the Senate says, you guys can go ahead and play your war games.
Yeah,
you know,
we'll do
play
work.
This, play your war games. We're going to work. We're going to try to spend all this money that we're planning to spend. And that's a tough job. There's so many dollars. And we have to be fair and equal and make sure everybody gets the same amount, except for some. You know,
yeah.
Except some aren't going to get anything.
Well, Jill Sanborn is her name, and she's the FBI counterterrorism official. And this is a piece we saw in the Epoch Times. She was asked by Senator Johnson whether firearms were recovered or any suspect was charged with firearm offenses. And that's important too, because as you suggested just the second ago, this is one of the most surveilled buildings in the world. Cameras everywhere. God knows where the cameras are. They're everywhere. And the FBI has had the chance to go over the tape, and they haven't even charged anyone. And here's what she said: to my knowledge, none. No one charged, nothing fired. And she added, I believe the only shots that were fired were the ones that resulted in the death of the lady. And that's referring to Ashley Babbitt, the Air Force veteran unarmed who was shot. So this is Johnson, you know, he got into big trouble because he said a couple of weeks ago, quote, I would say if it's properly termed an armed insurrection, it was a pretty ragtag one. Let's get to the point where PolitiFact, the fact checkers, fact checked him and said he's wrong, you know, in a statement of opinion. But now we're seeing evidence coming out that this is not to justify what happened, of course, because people that broke the law and broke stuff should be punished. But this is sounds like a massive propaganda ploy on their part to try to convince us that Trump was ready to arm the militias to take back when nothing of that sort happened.
You know, when we had the Middle East wars occurring just a decade or two ago, the conditions over there are not exactly conducive to a vacation. It gets very hot. And some people had to stay in tents, and some people suffered with this, but other people didn't have to. I mean, we spent a lot of money on air conditioning, unbelievable amount of money trying to air condition the desert to take care of the soldiers and make sure they had a little bit of comfort. But, you know, there's some stories now about the troops we have in Washington, D.C. First off, the first week, you know, when they found out, well, there's no war going on, did they send all the troops home? And these state militia, they ought to demand all their state militias come home. But anyway, they didn't do that, and they didn't have any cots. So what were the pictures?
Yeah.
They had them sleeping on a gym floor, you know, and that was it.
Parking lots too, yeah.
It's just unbelievable. And yet, when the wars continued in the Middle East, the other thing they did, the people who had been in the military, they were a hot commodity because they could sign up with the private industry, private individuals, because there was a lot of private protection made. And they stayed in the hotels.
Yeah.
You know, they were living high on the hog compared to what the military was putting up with. And yet it's the military that has to, bear the brunt of all this. And sometimes it's exaggerated as if they've just saved the world from a catastrophe, and yet we were just having a lot too much mischief. But right now, they're not doing a whole lot better. I don't think they're going to the movie theater or much anything up there right now. And what is there, 15,000 or 25?
Yeah, who knows?
Thousands of people in there. And I guess the recent story is that their diet's not so good.
Yeah.
there may be some danger in the diet. Contamination and all, and you'd think with the amount of money we spend on the military that things would be a little bit better. Now, when there's some illnesses come, they'll probably say, oh, they got coronavirus or something like that. But when the illnesses come, you won't hear so much about it. But at least somebody found out and did a report on how bad the food was, and bad food and sleeping on the floor isn't the best way to treat your military when there's no shooting going on and no war going on, and they're over there for who know what.
Yeah, you know, I don't quote me on this, although we're, but I believe it's cost something like $500 million a month to deploy these troops there. It's a lot of money to have these National Guard guys and gals.
Without a cook?
Yeah, without a cook. Let's look at this next clip. Here's a couple of clips where Dr. Paul was talking about. Massive scandal. Look at these guys sleeping on the ground. National Guard troops defending Capitol reportedly sick after eating raw meat. And let's go to the next one. This is from the the Gateway Pundit. Look at this, disgusting. Dozens of Michigan troopers, that's Whitmer's territory, dozens of Michigan troopers sent to the hospital. Look at that raw chicken. Here's something from the Gateway Pundit's article. It's talking about a whistleblower who told about these meals. Whistleblower described meals with raw beef in one delivery and lunches served on Sunday with metal shavings. Metal shavings in it. Other meals are described as a dinner roll and Sunny D. Photos sent by the whistleblower included the report showing raw, undercooked meat, metal shavings on rice. That is not a meal I want to eat. Metal shavings on ice. And meal, it's not even funny, but it's disgusting. I mean, it's hard to not conclude that these troops, these National Guard troops sent to D.C., are just used as human props for the House Democrats to use in support of the propaganda narrative that somehow there's a domestic terrorism threat. There's these domestic terrorists led by Donald Trump to take back the White House. And these poor young National Guard troops are used as plots. They're treated like garbage. It's disgusting. It's a national disgrace.
Well, we're still looking firmly for some movement in this lockdown, and we reported on a few yesterday. There's some hints that more will join, but we have a little skepticism about wait and see and who's going to go around their own rules. You know, the officials write rules and then they go around them. Have you ever heard of such a thing? And that's sort of the rule loop. That's sort of the rule they follow. But the first one I want to mention is Ducey in Arizona. You know, she is changing it. But the first question comes up is the one you asked yesterday. Well, if they're going to do it, just do it. Yeah. It's sort of like, how are you going to get the troops home? Just bring them home. You just march in, march them out. Why don't we just do that? But no, it looks like they're scheduling it, which is good, requiring schools to. This is mainly dealing with schools, open up the schools.
Yeah.
But it's still a movement in the direction that we want it to go. So that's on the agenda. And there's sometimes you can't keep up with every state that's made some positive move. You know, yesterday I think it was 16 or 18 states have done something. So the momentum is on our direction, and I think that's good.
You know, if we can pull up that clip, we have to skip one and go to the Governor Ducey clip just to illustrate what Dr. Paul was saying. And not that we're huge fans of executive orders, but Governor Ducey issues executive order requiring schools to offer in-person learning by March 15th. As we know, the teachers' unions are basically refusing to go back to work. You know, it kind of reminds me of what Reagan did with the air traffic controllers. They should probably have someone to do that. But this is what's happening. They don't want to go back to work. They're too terrified. The kids might get sick. But look at this next clip, Dr. Paul. This is from the CDC. These numbers are from the CDC, and I found this on Twitter. This is really amazing. Okay, age group. Since January 1st, 2020, 35,000 kids under the age of 18 died in the U.S. from all causes. Of those, just 200 involve COVID-19. That's out of 500,000 total COVID-19 deaths. Only 204 from 0 to age 17. 204 out of 500,000 COVID deaths. It's unbelievable. We shut down schools for millions of kids for a disease that accounted for less than 1% of all children's deaths and 0.04% of all COVID deaths. It's a very good tweet, and the numbers are from the CDC itself, so you can't say these are fudge numbers. It's really alarming.
And just think of all the harm done from the lockdowns. You know, the psychological harm, family harm,
suicides,
the whole mess. So the virus is serious, and we shouldn't ignore it or belittle it. But I tell you what. That same argument could be thrown right back to them. Why do you belittle, you know, the fact that you're overkill? This is way too much when you haven't proven a thing. You just have to have, you know, something to do. It's sort of like protecting Washington, D.C. today. Well, we have to do that. They Anonymous said, you know, they're coming. So they have to do something. Keep them scared. And it's just a shame. Yeah, the government and the people we send out there, they're responsible. But the people send them up there, and people fall in the trap of believing it, too. This is the thing. It's so frustrating that, you know, how many times have we mentioned the fact that this whole thing about masks, you know, people lecturing their neighbors and strangers about
yeah,
it,
yeah.
And it's that attitude that is so bad. But anyway, I think that we're still moving in the right direction, and I wish that, but the momentum may pick up, and I think that's what happens. The momentum has been in the wrong direction, and this is going to lead to this tremendous, enjoyable frustration of the president dealing with his blue states, because the blue states and the pressure is he has to defend the blue states, but. The people now, the majority of the people, we've done it for a year. That's enough. Why treat your kids this way? They're starting to ask good questions.
Well, according to the president, we're all a bunch of Neanderthals because we don't like the mask. And I just wonder if that's not a speciesist statement. I mean, he may need to be canceled for saying that. Poor Neanderthals. But in all seriousness, you make a great point that I want to amplify. This is a serious virus for a lot of people in a lot of categories. The problem with using it as a propaganda tool is for those people in high-risk categories who would like to have a vaccine, and some may, it's their choice, they are being denied it. They're facing shortages because people in very low-risk categories, like young, healthy people, are also lining up. The teachers want to be first in line for the vaccines as well. So you're using these scarce vaccines at present on people who don't necessarily need it, and you're depriving people that may want to take it, and it may end up helping them. So, but anyway, I think this section is called the tide is turning section, so we want to be more positive. And I got a little bit of a tricky request. If we could go back a couple to the clip, Ivy set to announce fate of Alabama's COVID-19. We'll be going back probably two. There she is. This is the governor of Alabama. We've got some good friends in Alabama, namely Lou Rockwell, Jeff Dice, and a few great people at the Mises Institute. They're going to be happy to hear this. It looks likely that today the governor of Alabama will follow the governor of Texas and announce that they are going to get rid of these ridiculous mask mandates and open up Alabama a little bit. I know Jeff and Lou are going to be happy to hear that. But speaking of mask mandates, and I'll just put this clip up so you can see, go forward a little bit, cases per 100,000 mask states versus no mask states. If we can have that clip, it's just it's a graph, if we have it there. Sorry, it's tricky today. I appreciate your work back there. Cases per 100,000, mask states versus no mask states. If you look at the trajectory of the virus through the country, it's virtually identical whether they were pro-mask or no mask mandates. So this speaks volumes about the destruction that was caused to so many millions of people with no gain. If they could show a gain, we might say, huh, well, you know, we're going to do a cost-benefit analysis. But when you show no gain, as we see here, not good.
You know, you brought up, and we talked a little bit about Alabama and the Mises Institute. You know, they deserve a lot of credit.
Oh, yeah.
Because they, in a quiet, a firm, nonviolent way, they defied the whole thing.
Yes.
And a lot of times, and including me at times, I just, I don't want the confrontation, and I don't push in all this. But they did not want to close down, but they worked on these principles that you go and you find your friends, and you work it out. And I don't think they lost their momentum. They kept having their
conferences.
Where'd they come in Lake Jackson when we were all frightened? They finally found a place not too far from Lake Jackson.
Yeah.
And we had the rally, and we had a reception, you know, for our group too, all here. And I think that their persistence is going to be easier. I'm sure they're very happy with what it was, but they deserve credit for
they
not
do.
Throwing up their arms. And Jeff's argument where was, if you give in too easily, it might be conceded that they're winning.
Yeah.
You know, you don't do it. So right now it's going to be a lot easier. But they do deserve an applause for the fact that they kept going.
Yeah.
And it's probably more important than ever, you know, because of the positions they've taken that they hear about, you know, the other side of the picture.
Yeah, they did a great job. I'm going to close with a couple of quick clips. You may want to comment on, you just want to laugh. But let's look at the next one, because this is, the tide is turning. This is a good news day. And we talked about this before, about the super spreader. Florida health officials say Super Bowl 55 was not a coronavirus super spreader event. So all the gloom and doom, excuse me, just like we're hearing about the gloom and doom of the new variants of the virus, but don't seem to be increasing the percentage of people that are getting sick. It was not a super spreader event. It didn't do anything of much at all. And here's a final one, Dr. Paul, because I want to end on a note of levity. The Babylon Bee, I think, is one of the greatest satire sites around there, and this is just hilarious. Babylon Bee, Experts warn that lifting mask mandates could contribute to the dangerous spread of freedom. And there's a picture of Texas with these arrows.
Great.
So they really, they are such a humorous sight. They really, and you do sense they have a real libertarian bent about them as well. So hats off to the Babylon Bee for keeping us healthy mentally with having a sense of humor and laughing.
Well, I think that is very true of what you're hitting there, is that the enemy, the people who put all these laws on us and all this intimidations and fear-mongering, I think they truthfully are intimidated about it, because I think they know the truth. I think the fact is that the truth is powerful. It's a powerful weapon, and it's frustrating because sometimes, you know, one individual say to me, I don't know, one person can't do much, I can't do this, I'm not going to vote. Well, whether you vote or not isn't the big issue. At times, people should vote. I had a few people vote for me to make a point of what is going on. So, yes, it is something that is very, very important that people speak out for the truth, because people will respond to this. At times with the frustration, people will say, you know, they still are able to do something. I tell individuals, especially so often, I still meet them, but they call me. I had a call yesterday, the day before, of an individual. I had not known him. He lived in another part of this country, and he has his own little group. And I said, you know, you probably have no idea how many people you've already influenced. The same way with the many people, talk shows and the podcasts that I go on that are just getting started, and they've been motivated because they heard a little bit about what the freedom movement's about. And all of a sudden, a light bulb goes on and they want to do something, but they almost want to throw up their hand. It's too big. It's too big. Just think, one mind at a time. You talk to one person and you don't know if you get two. And I remind people and I remind myself that when I first started, and the main reason why I ran for office the first time in 1974 was because of what happened and what was I thought would happen in the monetary system with the breakdown of the Bretton Woods Agreement. So I did that and ran for office with no expectation that it would ever go anywhere. And then I thought, well, I'll respond, and I get an occasional invitation to a college campus, and I would go. If they're inviting me, I'm going to go. And I would get huge crowds out. 15 and 20 people would come back in those days. And still, I thought, this isn't very many. Is this working? But it turned out 15 or 20 years later, I knew some of those young people who weren't quite as young, and they were very much involved, and some of them worked directly for me. So I think if you don't think that you're going to save the world tomorrow, because a lot of people used to ask me, how can you put up with that? How can you tolerate all that up there? And I would tell them, well, I'm not overly optimistic. I accept what comes. And sometimes the surprises are always on the plus side, and that's good. But the other way to do this and be willing to continue the fight is find the people that agree with you. And the more you get to know them, and then fighting this fight can be actually fun, because we don't know how quickly we better get our house in order. But I'll tell you what, when you find a true ally for the cause of liberty, it is pretty neat getting together. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.